Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. There was a time, not that long ago, when being a teenager meant you probably wanted a job. A part-time job meant responsibility. It meant discipline. It meant money. It meant freedom. Today, most teenagers are not interested in working. Is it laziness, a lack of opportunity, or something else? Harold Valderrama is in the minority. He is among the 1 in 3 teenagers in Florida who is in the job market. In fact, he's not only in the job market, he has a part-time job.
I work doubles on Monday and Wednesday. What I mean by a double is that there's a morning shift and a night shift. The morning shift is...
Harold is 19 years old. He lives with his mom in Miami Beach and works at Flywheel Sports in North Miami. It's an exercise studio with exercise bikes and bar fitness classes. He's a studio coordinator there. He earns $12 an hour while he goes to school part-time at Miami-Dade College.
But, you know, it's a great schedule, especially for a student like me. It gives me, you know, a small shift with, you know, a good paying amount of money, and I can still go to school in the mornings, you know, and still get to work. It's not like an 8-hour shift.
I was ready for more responsibility. I wanted to move on to these things.
That's Zoe Stefan. She's 18 and a freshman at the University of Miami. She grew up in Dade County. While she's not working as she settles into campus life as a freshman, she spent her summer working as a counselor at a summer camp on the other side of the continent, just south of Seattle, Washington.
I was in a unit called Blueberry Hill, which meant that I had girls between the ages of about 3rd, 4th grade to 6th grade. And generally I had 6th graders. I was with them all day. I would have about 2 hours off at some point during the day, which was pre-scheduled.
While it was her 8th year at the camp, this past summer was the first summer that she got a paycheck. It was almost an around-the-clock job in the wilderness doing the usual summer camp activities.
Was it worth the money, the time that you spent, those long days, long nights?
Yeah, I would say so. We don't get paid a ton because we also live there and they provide food and everything. And you can't really pay by hour in that kind of situation because you're literally working 22 hours a day. But for me, it was worth it, yeah.
Zoe and Harold are among a shrinking proportion of 16 to 19-year-olds working, or at least even interested in working. At the beginning of this century, a little over half the teenage population were considered part of the workforce. Nationally, that has fallen to 1/3, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics predicts by 2024, only 1 out of every 4 American teenagers will be considered part of the country's workforce. This drop nationwide mirrors what the South Florida economy has experienced. Over the past decade, the workforce participation rates for teens in Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade, and Monroe counties has been falling. It began shrinking before the Great Recession, and except for a year here and there, it has continued to trend lower, even as the national and regional economies have rebounded, and while thousands of new jobs have been created. Of course, most of those jobs created are not appropriate or even relevant for teenagers. But consider that the highest growth rate in jobs over the past decade in South Florida is for work in general retailing. Jobs in grocery stores and other food stores also has grown faster than the overall job market. These are businesses that traditionally have been places where teenagers can find work and find those first jobs. Andres Boquero is one of those teens who found his first job at a place lots of others have before him.
It's normal stuff like put the fries in the fryer, get the drinks ready, get the food in the bag, take care of the cash and the register.
He works at McDonald's. He's 16 years old and a junior in high school. He says he's into science and taking AP Environmental Science and AP Biology this year. He gets paid about $9 an hour for this, his first real job.
I was looking for anything. I went to Publix first. I went online to all these websites and I tried like looking around, seeing if anybody was hiring. And they usually all say go to online. So that got kind of annoying. But other than that, you know, they just want to take me for my age and for my lack of experience. The only reason I got the job at McDonald's was because I'm 16, and they just needed people.
Andres will be working to find the right balance between his first job and going to high school. So will Colby Asu. She's 17, a high school senior, and working in the restaurant business, making $8.10 an hour plus tips.
I work as a server / like cashier at Beehive Kitchen.
It's a locally owned fast casual restaurant. Its first location opened last spring in Fort Lauderdale, and that's when Colby was hired.
I've wanted a job for as long as I could comprehend the concept of a job. just because I don't like asking my mom for money, and I don't like, she already like does things for me, so I don't like asking for an extra mile of stuff.
We will hear more from all these teens about why they work when most teens don't. But first, still to come in our program, what kind of shape is the job market in for teens and why?
It's just been a collapse in teen employment.
Most of their job prospects are largely limited to, you know, restaurant industry, retail sales.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, the disappearing working teenager. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Paul Harrington went to work when he was 14 in New England. He started at a gas station and then worked at a manufacturing plant. By 17, he was working in a warehouse where workers belonged to the Teamsters Union.
And it was one of the most hard, brutal jobs I ever worked in my life, and it was a tremendous motivator for me to go to college.
He's now an economics professor at Drexel University in Philadelphia, where he studies youth employment. Ali Bustamante also studies labor markets today.
Really, between ages 16 and 22, I was working retail. And today I'm an economist.
Bustamante is an economics professor at FIU, and he questions if his time spent working among the sales racks and retail could have been better spent amongst textbooks and economic formulas.
Can I earnestly say that that contributed at all to my path and to my success today? I think there's that would have been time better spent on my behalf, or even just, you know, reading my books and getting better prepared for college and making sure that I get did better on the SAT or something like that.
His academic colleague in labor economics, Paul Harrington of Drexel University, though, thinks that early job experience is invaluable later on.
I think that early work experience for kids really does matter. I think grit does matter. I think character traits do matter. I think your ability to work to get exposed to an adult environment at age 15 or 16 or 17 matters a lot.
I would always want to debunk the myth that we need youth employment to create grit and self-reliance.
Again, FIU economics professor Ali Bustamante.
I wonder if we can actually have a society where youth can choose to, you know, devote more time to the studies or you know, have greater opportunities to test out careers as opposed to just taking the jobs that they need to take because they need to either feed themselves or assist their families.
There are economic reasons for teenagers to work. They or their families simply need the money. And then there are social reasons to work, to get experience of working. Why teens are not working or interested in working is more complex. The Great Recession has kept older workers in the job market longer. School academic demands are higher than they were a generation ago. Some schools, in fact, require volunteer hours for graduation, cutting into available time for a part-time job. One study examining the drop in working hours among young adult men offers this explanation. They are playing ever more realistic and interactive online video games instead of being available to work. This research figures most of the drop in working hours for men between the ages of 21 and 30 since the beginning of the century can be explained by them spending more time playing video games. Now, this study did not look at spending time on social media. But those are older workers than the teenagers that the data finds are just not even participating in the job market. Back to Ali Bustamante of FIU and Paul Harrington of Drexel University. So what's the state of the teen job market?
Pretty poor. If you look at teenagers, 16 and 19 years old, over the whole post-World War II period up through 2000, 1948 to 2000, somewhere around 45 to 50% of the kids in the United States in that age group had a job. In the last 15 years, we've just seen that fraction fall down to now about 30%, a little bit lower. So there's just been a collapse in teen employment, and that collapse is not just one that influences household income, although that's, I don't mean to trivialize that, but the human capital losses, the developmental losses of that decline in work experience are terrible for the American economy in the longer term.
Ali, how about from a Southeast U.S. or a Florida perspective? What's the state of youth employment?
Well, from our perspective, it's actually even worse because the regional South, and which as much as Florida and particularly South Florida, we don't think of ourselves as part of the regional South. We do face some of the similar problems that the regional South does face when it comes to youth employment, in the sense that we do have a high disproportionate share of particularly youth of color and low-income earning youth that are disproportionately affected by youth unemployment and also by the phenomenon of being disconnected youth.
What's a disconnected youth? What does that mean? Somebody who doesn't have a mobile phone?
Disconnected youth are actually those youth which tend to be between 16 to 24 years old that neither work nor go to school.
So they're disconnected from the workforce altogether. And Professor Harrington, you mentioned the year 2000 is kind of a turning mark in the percentage of teenagers that are interested in working. What happened at the turn of the century?
Well, I think the single most important thing was really 15 years of poor economic growth. You know, we had the dot-com recession back in 2001,
from 2000 till today, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yes, that's right. So 2001, we had that dot-com recession. We had a very weak recovery from that. We get to 2007, and we just, you know, get the financial collapse and massive job losses. So during this whole period of time, you see this continuous decline in teen employment rates. Teen labor markets never came back. And as we've gotten into this very sluggish job market recovery, we still have not seen, you know, much gain in the share of kids who have a job. As I said, it, you know, in the past, somewhere around 45% of kids would typically be working in any given month. You know, now we're down to about 30%. So it's a very, very large loss in the chance of a kid getting employed.
Has that been a slow erosion over the past half generation, or is this something that you can trace back to that very mild recession in 2001 that it just fell off a cliff and never came back?
Yeah, I think what happens is we did fall off that cliff, we didn't come back, and then you get behavioral changes as a consequence of this. You know, it's kind of like a ratchet. And so when kids work at lower and lower rates, then the values of working become less apparent to kids, because kids are at the bottom of the labor queue, and all these older workers now have increased their labor force participation. Mm-hmm. So people 65 to 74, you know, you take a look at the data down in your way in Florida. Back in 2000, you had about 17% of people 65 to 74 were in the job market. You know, by 15, 16, it's up to a quarter. So we go from a sixth to a quarter of, you know, people 65 to 74 are participating, and you see very high shares of them going to traditional teen job markets.
Ollie, let me get you.
You go to a grocery store down there, and you'll see a 60-year-old guy bagging.
Ollie, respond to that idea that as baby boomers have continued to age, as we all do. Time moves in one direction and one speed, but they're not cycling out of the workforce, making room in the employment queue, as Professor Harrington puts it.
Well, I think one of the things we have to keep in mind is the economic cycle, right? You know, youth unemployment, like the overall unemployment rate and the unemployment rate for elder populations, is largely a reflection of how the economy is doing and how much slacker or how tight the labor market is at any current time. And so just something to keep in mind is, you know, there have been considerable declines in youth unemployment. There have been considerable declines in the overall unemployment rate and in the rate of disconnected youth over the past 5-6 years. And that's largely a reflection of the economy improving. Now, this phenomenon of, you know, elder populations, particularly those above the age of 65, increasing in their share or their presence of the broader labor force, I mean, that's certainly largely a reflection of the economic recession. You know, one of the things we need to keep in mind is the structural necessity that oftentimes is a trigger for continued presence in the labor force or for entering the labor force in the first place.
So what do you mean by that?
In the case of elder populations, you know, much of the rationale behind those populations 65 and older staying in the workplace longer isn't because they didn't want to retire and have a margarita on the beach. It was really largely a reflection of the fact that, you know, many of these folks lost their retirement savings in the economic crisis. You know, they had 401ks that they couldn't tap into anymore. And so really as a you know, in order to survive, these folks had to either keep working or get back into the workforce, and perhaps in some capacities, as Professor Harrington noted, in some capacities that were at the lower end of the wage scale, which, you know, were drastically different than perhaps the employment that they previously were, you know, in the industries and in these sectors and even the wage scale that they previously inhibited.
Ollie, let me have you try to reconcile a couple of the pieces of statistics that we've talked about here. One is what you just mentioned, which is the overall improvement in the unemployment rate for all kinds of workers and all kinds of ages, including those here in Florida and in South Florida. That has no doubt has improved. I mean, there are places in South Florida that has an unemployment rate that's below 5%, which most economists would argue that's full employment. It's really tight labor markets. But earlier, Professor Harrington cited data that the participation rate, the percentage of teenagers, for instance, that are raising their hand who are working or want to work, is at a half a generational low. So despite the fact that the labor market is tight and presumably jobs are being created and opportunities are being created, teenagers are not flooding into the marketplace looking for work like they did 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
It's not just youth who are who have lower labor force participation rates than they had 20 years ago. We're also looking at the broader, you know, the broader prime age population. So, you know, that population between 25 and 54, that population itself has considerably lower labor force participation rate than they've had in the past. In fact, much of this is largely a reflection of the fact that while the unemployment rates may be, you know, nationally 4.3%, you know, in certain regions, you know, under 5%, you know, in most regions under 5%. Most people, you know, we look at that number at the unemployment rate and we say, well, that looks like full employment. But the truth of the matter is that many folks have fallen out of the labor force over the past 10 years and they haven't come back. Not because they're opting out of the labor force entirely, but because In the current wage structure that exists and in the current type of job structures and occupations that are available to them, that many of them do not see as employment as particularly attractive, not meeting, you know, what sometimes we would call their reserve wage or what I would say much more particularly, not offering the types of jobs that they want to do that maybe provide meaning in their lives or that reflect their own personalities or characters. And so in many ways, the youth are really just following a broader national trend among other populations, again, in largely the elderly excluded, which is that labor force participation rate has not rebounded in the same way that the unemployment rate has. And it's just really a reflection that the labor market today, even though the unemployment rate is low, still has a lot of slack.
What kind of jobs are we talking about for the roughly one out of four teenagers in the United States that actually has a job? What are these jobs?
Most of their job prospects are largely limited to, restaurant industry, retail sales. And these are, something that I myself reflect upon, which is, are these jobs, adding anything? Are they adding any considerable value, any considerable skills, any considerable, human capital to the youth? You know, would a retail job, at your local retailer, which is probably a national chain, is that going to build really any human capital for somebody who is prospectively thinking about becoming a teacher or an engineer or a computer programmer? It seems to me that the greater decline in labor force participation among youth and again many other workers as well, it's really just largely a reflection of the fact that the jobs being offered don't necessarily put them on path to develop these broader skills in the careers that they themselves ideally would like to pursue.
FIU economics professor Ali Bustamante and Drexel University economics professor Paul Harrington. We'll hear more from them about the value of working and the types of jobs open to teens a little bit later on in the program. But still to come, on the front lines of those entry-level jobs as a teenager.
It's normal stuff like put the fries in the fryer, get the drinks ready, get the food in the bag, take care of the cash and the register.
I work as a server / cashier.
My duties at the studio is cleaning, any technical issues,
This is the Sunshine Economy, the disappearing working teenager. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening to WLRN. By the time we met Andres Baquero in his parents' dining room in late August, he had put in 8.5 hours behind the counter at a local McDonald's in South Miami-Dade County. We spoke to him before the school year began, so he had the time, and he wasn't quite sure how he would balance his homework and work once his junior year in high school began. Maybe try to limit his work hours to Fridays and over the weekends. His job at McDonald's came after wanting to work since he was 14. His motivations are both economic and social. He wants the money, but he also thinks his work experience will show reliance and discipline.
You know, just to save money for college, I guess, and for books and stuff, for school. You do need work experience, So if I get to college and I need a job and they see that I've, in my high school years, I've done absolutely nothing, then they're not really, I guess, not going to pick me. But if they see that I have some work, I've worked at McDonald's for a while, then they'll be like, oh, all right, he's got some experience, so we can rely on him somewhat.
Countywide in Miami-Dade County, only 1 in 5 16 to 19-year-olds are considered in the workforce, and only 1 in 6 are considered employed. Among the 4 South Florida counties, the workforce participation rate among teens is lowest in Miami-Dade. Now, a quick note about the official unemployment rate. To be counted as unemployed, you have to be available and interested in working. If you are not, and there are lots of reasons why you wouldn't be, such as going to school, caring for a child or parent, or just plain discouraged about finding work, then you are not considered in the workforce and you are not counted among the officially unemployed. Now, the 5 out of 6 teenagers in Miami-Dade County who are not working includes all 16 to 19-year-olds, including those not interested or available to work. All this makes Andres an exception to the data, showing most teens are not part of the workforce.
I just want to see if I can earn some money, learn how to manage my money, and then just gain work experience. So if I want to move on to something else, then they can look at my record and be like, oh, all right, you worked at McDonald's for a certain amount of time, and therefore we can rely on you, you know?
It's pretty tough for a teenager to get a job, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've been looking since I was 14. So, yeah, it did take a while. Like, a lot of small jobs, they require, like, GEDs and stuff like that. But, I mean, no one's hiring 14-year-olds anymore. I mean, I guess there's less room for more kids or teenagers to work.
Older workers are staying in the job market longer. During the Great Recession, 1 in 5 people 65 and older were still in the workforce. Today, it's 1 in 4. Because we're talking about the baby boomer generation, that's more than 3 million more people who are working or looking for work beyond their 65th birthday.
Do any of your friends have part-time jobs like this?
No, not really. A couple, but not a lot.
Have they been asking you about your work?
Yeah. I mean, they want to work. They wanted to get jobs early in the summer too, but they couldn't. They couldn't find really much work. But they're saying that they're going to try again this year. But they're going to give us some time because they want to see what their schedule's like for school, and then they move on to the job so they can like fit it in there.
Balancing work and school can be tough. Rising academic standards, required volunteer hours, and other school demands can mean fewer hours available for teens to have those part-time jobs. Zoe Stefan figured out how to strike that balance as a high school student working as a receptionist at a martial arts studio.
So I think it was only about last year, so I was like 17, when I started my receptionist job. It was kind of impulsive because I'd been with this martial arts teacher since we were staying, like basically working in a rec center where we didn't have like our own center or building. And then when he got his own building and his own studio and I started taking classes there, he needed people to work reception and he wanted the reception to offer the reception job to some of the like teenage students he had. And so I said yes and that I was interested and I started doing that. I mean, it was great. I got more access to the martial arts stuff and I got kind of a slower intro to working.
She's 18 now, and after spending the summer working as a camp counselor in Washington State, she's in her freshman year at the University of Miami. And with that transition, she's not working right now while she figures out how to be a college student, but she thinks...
I mean, it's really, really a personal choice. Like, it kind of depends on, like, background stuff, like, if for some reason you need the money, like, if you're going to school and you need to pay tuition, stuff like that. But it's also like a personal thing, like, can you handle this with your studies? Can you handle this with just like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I really think it's very personal and should just be totally up to the person.
Why was it right for you then, given those personal considerations?
I was ready for more responsibility. I wanted to move on to these things. I didn't really think of it as a job when I started all that much because it's somewhere I've been going for years. Like, this was my 8th year at camp, and also, like, I don't know. Independence is kind of important to me, and that's something I wanted to achieve. And that's the job helped with that.
She's considering tutoring other students, or even in this age of Amazon, she wants to work in a bookstore. But now she's a full-time student with a savings account.
Has working changed your relationship with money or with spending, saving, about how you relate to the world financially, how you look at the world financially?
Yeah, probably. I have more spending money now, but somehow I'm less willing to spend it. I guess.
Is that because you had to work for it to get it, maybe?
Kind of. I mean, like, I've never been, like, a super spendy person, and it's probably also just a maturity thing, but recently it's been more like, yeah, I guess it's that I worked for it, but, like, it's nice seeing, like, you have actually, like, a backup savings. And I was actually saving up for something. I need a new computer this year.
19-year-old Harold Valderrama uses some of his paycheck to help out at home, contributing to his mom for some of the household expenses.
I felt like, you know, I needed a job to help out. Like, here, Mom, here's $100 for the phone bill. Here, Mom, I'll pay for groceries this time. You know, like, I want to, like, help out at the house. So,
did she accept that help?
Yeah, she did. You know, when I got the job at Flywheel, you know, the first check I got, like, I was like, look, I'm going to start getting this amount of money consistently every 2 weeks. You know, whatever you need me to pay. So we sat down, you know, we made a budget for each other. You know, like, oh, don't spend this too much. Or, hey, look, this week you pay for groceries, I'll pay for groceries. Just, you know, made a nice little, you know, schedule. I take care of the phone bill now and the electric bill. You know, the electric is 100 and the phone bill 76 for us too. So I take care of that.
Harold works at Flywheel Sports at the gym in North Miami. He goes to school at Miami-Dade College, and he found that striking that balance between school and work is pretty difficult.
How are you going to balance school and work? How does that work out for you?
It's tough, honestly. 'Cause with my manager, you know, I told her, look, I'm gonna go to school Tuesdays and Thursdays in the morning, so you can't schedule me in the morning because I'm gonna be at school. But in order for me to maximize my hours at work, every other day I have to work. So if I have to work Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and even Sundays, I'm gonna have to do it. So, you know, it's gonna be a lot of time taken away from me, you know, free time. You know, I have a girlfriend, I have my mom, you know, I have my friends, you know, so it's going to be a lot of time taken away from that. Is it going to be stressful? Yes. You know, because I'm going to have to really crack down on managing my time, because when I'm not at work, I would probably have to be doing homework in order to catch up and go to school. So it's going to be a lot of time management and a lot of not being lazy. That's one thing about me. I'm a little lazy. I get a little lazy sometimes, but I got to get it done. I motivate myself to make sure I get everything, all of my responsibilities done.
Where does your work ethic come from, do you think?
My work ethic, I would say. So I went to Bay Harbor in middle school, and I went to Miami Beach High during high school. In the seventh grade, Bay Harbor made a basketball team. I decided to try out. Ends up, I make the first year team, varsity team. Eighth grade, I was the starting point guard and the team captain. And I fell in love with the game. My friends over the summer going into high school were like, work on your game, work on your game. Try out for high school. See if you make the team. Worked on my game that whole summer, tried out. First time tryouts freshman year, make the cut, make the JV team. For the next 4 years, I was blessed enough to play for Miami Beach High and play basketball. I had a great coach, Coach Shaw.
That's head coach Jacob Shaw.
Who showed me discipline, how to treat others, you know, how to love, how to be a man. And it was a constant grind every single day, you know, working, waking up at 6 a.m., getting to school at 7:20, going to school, being a good student, you know, not hanging out in the halls, not doing your work, you know, being a good student. And then after school, from we would get out at 2:20, he would give us like a lunch, you know, get something to eat, show up to the gym at 3 o'clock, and we would practice until 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock even, working out, cardio, working on plays in the gym. So I feel like that 4 years and that life experience taught me to, for the rest of my life, like on how I handle things, who I am, you know, what do I bring to the table? Like, I constantly always be like, oh, if this is what I would have done on the court, or this is what, you know, I would have treated it. Like, I put situations in my life and how I treated it, like, on a basketball court. I would compare sometimes. But I feel like that's where my worth ethic comes from that experience in basketball.
What have you been able to take away from the basketball court and apply it to you joining the workforce right now in a part-time capacity with hopes of finishing up your associate's degree and moving toward what may come next?
Right. Definitely one skill that I really did learn is, like, if you show up on time, you're late. If you're early, you're on time. And so literally ever, like, that was Coach Shaw, like, show up to practice early so you're on time.
That's a tough lesson in South Florida to learn sometimes,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, like to just put their time, like, oh, I got 20 minutes, you know, exactly to get there. And what do? They leave exactly at 20 minutes, and you never know what life brings you. You know, traffic, cars, someone else's cars break down, you know, you get stopped by the police, you know. So I feel like I always give myself, like, if I have to be somewhere in 20 minutes, I'm going to give myself 30 minutes to get there. You know, an extra 10 minutes goes a long way. And I put that in everything, you know, if I'm going to meet my friends, go to work, you know, make a movie, you know, certain things that are at a set time, I make it there early.
That effort was tougher the day that we spoke back in August when Harold was at the dining room table inside the condominium he shares with his mom on Miami Beach. The car the two share was not running, so he had to figure out how to get to the gym to get to his job that night and put in his 2 hours of work.
Why is work important to you?
I feel work is important, you know, because it teaches you certain, like, lessons in life, I would say, and, like, you know, discipline. And, you know, I feel like at work, if you work for a company, you know, and on a daily basis you have people coming into your company or coming into your store or whatever, you know, you interact with other people and you affect other people's lives. And I feel like that's a very, like, important, like, you have a responsibility. Like, when you work for a company, you know, you affect how people view that company. And so I feel like if, you know, you have the right mindset and you really care, you would put on a great experience. You know, people will recognize that.
Verlina Scarment wants the same chance. She's 17, a junior in high school, and is looking for work.
Actually, I've been reaching out, calling places, doing job applications. What else have I been doing?
What's been the response? What have you heard back?
Oh, I'm going to call you back, or I'll get back to you if I'm interested in you. Or sometimes I just never get a call back.
How's that feel?
It feels kind of crazy because I sat here and did this long application and I didn't get hired.
Discouraged?
Not really discouraged, but I would say I'm not happy with it.
She says she's filled out a lot of applications trying to find a job.
Panera Bread, Polo Tropical, Target, Macy's.
But without a car, she would have to rely on public transportation. And she knows working so far outside her neighborhood in North Dade County would just be impractical for her.
I'm forced to look for jobs in my area. And most of the jobs are filled with older people. So it's like, I wouldn't say I'm stuck, but I have to keep on looking and looking and looking.
And the fact that she is looking means that she is counted as part of the workforce as a teenager in South Florida. Still to come, work that complements an education or competes with it.
We do find that if you do work in a place like Target or Kmart or a retail store or amusements, there are actually very substantial human capital gains.
When young people want to seek employment, they, I think, largely would like to see employment that adds value to the career path that they're on.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. This summer, the unemployment rate among teenagers dropped to its lowest level since the summer of the year 2000. Nationally, the unemployment rate for teens in July, 13.2%. Now, July is an important month to measure the teenage job market. It's the height of summer, so if a 16, 17, 18, or 19-year-old can't or does not want to find work during the school year, the summer is the time to be in the workforce. Now, the good news for teens and working is that the unemployment rate has been falling. As recently as just three summers ago, the national unemployment rate was over 20%. But the falling unemployment rate masks the dropping proportion of teenagers interested in working at all. That's the participation rate we've mentioned earlier. During the summer, presumably when there are more teenagers available to work because they're out of school, the participation rate, while it has been climbing over the past six summers, remains well below where it was before the Great Recession. Just a lower share of teenagers are interested in working. Economists have a phrase called opportunity cost. Basically, it's the idea that making one choice means you have to give up the benefit of something else. Taking a job as a teenager may mean money in their pocket, developing the social skills as a member of the workforce, but less time for school and extracurricular activities. Is the benefit of one choice worth the cost of losing out on another? Put it another way, does a part-time job for a teenager compete with their education or complement it? Ali Bustamante is a professor at FIU and works with its Center for Labor Research and Studies. Paul Harrington studies youth employment as a professor at Drexel University and is the director of that school's Center for Labor Markets and Policy.
The education system, both the secondary and post-secondary system, has viewed work experiences as sort of too vocational, that there are better things for kids to be doing. You know, at the high school level, they see work as an opportunity cost for studying, although there's no evidence that that's the case at all. And I think at the post-secondary level, you know, you're seeing a lot of admissions criteria now very heavily influencing things like community service and the like. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the opportunity cost of that is work experience. So, you know, there's not much value placed on work, you know, with respect to the rewards of the higher ed system. So I think you don't see much activity in terms of high schools and colleges trying to get kids tied in and rewarding work experience.
So to some degree, this gets to the opportunity cost and the education cost. Is a 19-year-old, is their time best spent in the classroom learning how to become an electrical engineer as opposed to their time spent at the sub shop making tuna salad sandwiches?
We do find that if you do work at a place like Target or Kmart or a retail store or at amusements, there are actually very substantial human capital gains. That when you track these kids over the next 10 or 12 years, you find the probability that they're employed goes up, their earnings are higher. You find that kids who work while they're in high school are more likely to go to college and are actually more likely to finish college. That, you know, human capital is really composed of, in my mind, four things. It's literacy, reading, writing, math skills. It's occupational proficiencies. It's a set of what I would think of as sort of communications, negotiation, sort of sometimes you call them social skills. And then the last thing are sort of fundamental behavioral traits. And these latter two are very highly valued in the job market, mm-hmm. and early work experience really helps develop these for young kids. So the empirical evidence is really quite strong about the gains to early work experience.
Ali, how do you kind of respond to some of that?
Maybe there are two paths, right, that most folks are taking. There are some folks who take the path that they do graduate from college and they pursue careers. And, you know, the returns on their college education, you know, it puts them on a very specific, you know, a completely different path of employment that is not necessarily afforded for those without higher education. I think that much is true. And my contention would be that for those folks, you know, again, working at the sub shop or at the local store has partly minimal returns relative to the possibilities that they can, you know, work less and graduate on time, or work less and, you know, get better grades and things like that. You know, so where they can actually, you know, focus more on the skills that are directly related to the occupations they pursue. In terms of statistics, I mean, we see that 70-80% of college students work during the semester. So, you know, it's not that college students themselves are saying, you know, no employment. You know, we don't want to work. We just want to study. We just want to focus. In fact, 40% of them or so work more than 30 hours per week. What I think this is largely pointing to is the fact that when young people want to seek employment, they, I think, largely would like to see employment that puts them, that adds value to the career path that they're on. And so in one regard, I think, you know, we can think about youth employment as complementary to their education. I think that's one perspective of it. And I think that's where I would just, you know, I caution to say, you know, that the decline in labor force participation among youth, any potential blips in youth unemployment are in and of themselves problematic. I would say they're not problematic if, you know, folks are just, you know, or if youth and young people are just disproportionately putting much more of their time in school. Now, the other side, which I think Professor Harrington is absolutely right about, is, you know, there is a second path. There is a second cohort of youth who are not going to graduate from college, who may not even enter college in the first place. And so, but even I think that, I think we have to discern what kind of employment we really think would be beneficial for them for you know, from the human capital perspective. If they work at a restaurant, if they work in retail at a very, at a young age, 16, 17, 18 year olds, I mean, there is some value to that in the sense that, you know, when they get to age 20, 23, 24, they'll be much more experienced in these occupations, in these industries, so that they can compete for higher paying jobs and so on. What I would just certainly question is, can we do better? Can we do better in terms of promoting youth employment that perhaps isn't limited to industries that are predominantly oriented towards low-wage work? I think something that shouldn't get lost in this conversation as well is, you know, we oftentimes think about youth unemployment or disconnected youth as if it's this largely abstract concept. But, you know, when we decompose the figures, we see who the youth unemployed are. We see who the disconnected youth are. And they tend to be disproportionately people of color, particularly young African-American males have the highest youth unemployment rate. They have the highest disconnected youth rates. It tends to be largely concentrated in non-metro areas, particularly as we think of, again, the American South and also the Rust Belt. These are locations and these are folks who have aren't just necessarily facing the same labor market that we're all facing. They're facing that same market, but really with the baggage and the legacy of a lot of just, you know, structural changes that have really eroded their capacity to find good employment.
That was Ali Bustamante with FIU's Center for Labor Research and Studies, along with Paul Harrington with Drexel University's Center for Labor Markets and Policy. Still to come, getting hired and loving it.
They scheduled the interview, I think, that weekend.
Her interview was great.
Then the manager's like, all right, when can you start?
The first impression with her was her energy. It was instantaneous and was like, you're done. I mean, we're hired.
And I was like, ooh, okay.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, the disappearing working teenager. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. You can look for us on Twitter at WLRN and, of course, online at WLRN.org. Now, much of this program, you have heard the data showing a shrinking share of 16 to 19-year-olds are in the workforce nationally and in Florida and in South Florida. You've heard some of the theories about why that is, and you've heard from some of the teens who are bucking the trend. Colby Asu is one of those. She's a 17-year-old high school senior in Fort Lauderdale who works at Beehive Kitchen. That's a new fast casual concept restaurant with one location. Another one is on its way on Las Olas, and several more are planned throughout South Florida. She was hired by Wade Lowe, a general manager of the restaurant and a veteran of the restaurant industry in South Florida. We spoke with them separately about being a working teenager and hiring one.
One of my friends came in for training because she was like, yeah, there's this new place that's opening up. So I came in, I applied. They scheduled the interview, I think, that weekend. And I had the interview. Everything went smooth.
Her interview was great. The second that you meet her, she's, I'm trying to think of the right word, she's contagious. You know, you really can tell that she, whatever it is she's doing, she's happy.
Then the manager's like, all right, when can you start?
The first impression with her was her energy. It was instantaneous and was like, you're done. I mean, we're hired. We didn't go through the long process with her.
And I was like, ooh, okay.
She was hired on the spot. She was one of our first handful. She may have been one of the first, if not the first, within, I would say, with it, for sure the first day that we were doing hiring, she was one of those. You know, if we could clone her, we would. It would be great. She was right off the bat, for sure.
I've wanted a job for as long as I could, like, comprehend the concept of a job. Just because I don't like asking my mom for money, and I don't like, she already, like, does things for me, so I don't like asking for an extra mile of stuff.
What we try and do here, at least, is to teach the core values of life in general, you know, from being on time, being a professional, you know, being a pro, coming in, you know, dressed well, you know, no, just the appearances, you know, so it can go to whatever else you do. You know, we're really trying to build some character too, you know, in what we do in training.
I don't know, looking at my paychecks just makes me feel so nice. And I like that I can buy my own things, and I can, like, and I can kind of rely on myself more, and it kind of gives me more responsibility.
I seem to have noticed a little bit where less are coming in the door, that you get that feeling, that Colby feeling, where you're like, that's the one absolutely we need to hire. So I don't know if the work ethic has changed. I feel like maybe there's fewer that have that drive.
I used to slack off in school and all this stuff, and now, like, I'm trying to get back on top of my game, and I feel like having a job helped that, because if with my mom, it's like school's the most important thing. So if I started, like, failing, then I'd have to leave the job. So because I like my job, I don't want to leave the job, so I'm doing better in school. So it's kind of like everything's, like, connecting to each other.
Colby was an amazing hire, and she has been one of those people that the second she steps in the door has a smile until the second she leaves.
That's Wade Lowe of Beehive Kitchen. He hired 17-year-old Colby Asu. She says when she opened her first paycheck, she saw $30 had been taken out for taxes. Welcome to the working world. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. Katie Lepre is our engagement editor, and she helped with guest booking. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Working for a living.